What is it about Americans and their cabins of log and wood? Well, Ted Lefroy has just actually been in America. He's the director of Center for Environment at UTAS. Were you in a log cabin, Ted Lefroy? Welcome back.
Thanks, Rick. No, I wasn't in a log cabin. Something more salubrious. But I did come across a story about a famous cabin.
What was it like in America? Did you have a good time?
Wonderful.
In the Northwest?
Wonderful.
What's the landscape like?
It is so young compared to Australia. The thing that strikes you is it's all so recent. It's so fertile. It's so vigorous. It's exuberant, like its people.
So, if they're young and vigorous and exuberant, then what are we like?
Laconic, laid back, relaxed.
Infertile. No, dry. Dry.
Yeah.
So what's this cabin that you found?
Well,
from which spring many of our ideas about...
Well, I was at the University of Washington, and I heard soon after I got there that there was a woman there called Estella Leopold, who was 90 years old, still working, doing research, had taught thousands of, well, at least 1,000 students in botany and forestry, and she happened to be the daughter of a man called Aldo Leopold, who is very famous in America for having really kick-started the environment movement. And the week that I was about to leave, she released a book called Stories from the Leopold Shack, which I've read since I've come back. And what's fascinating is to get her perspective of the environment in which her father put together these ideas, which have been so influential.
So what are some of the ideas that came out of his shack?
Okay, well, he was a forester, her father.
Yeah.
And he realised that economic arguments for conservation simply weren't working. And at the time, that was the theme. It was utilitarian. It was wise use of resources. And his argument was basically an ethical one. We need to extend our idea of ethics, that is how humans get on with each other, to include all living things. Now, he wasn't new in doing that. Darwin had talked about sympathy for nature, and Thoreau, who's probably more famous than Leopold, talked about...
He had a shack too, didn't he?
He did have a shack on a pond in Concord, Massachusetts. And he talked about all the living things around him being his community. But the difference with Leopold was that he used the emerging language of ecology about food pyramids and flow of energy. And he was also an acute observer of nature. Excuse me. And But it was really the way he wrote. He had just a magnificent way with words. And there's one essay buried in this obscure little book of his called Thinking Like a Mountain. If you put Thinking Like a Mountain into a search engine, it comes up straight away. It's under 900 words, but it manages to convey some absolutely profound ideas. He has such a compressed way of writing. And what he was, you know, one of his quotes was we abuse nature because we treat it as a commodity which belongs to us rather than a community to which we belong. Now, I mean, it doesn't sound that profound, but really it's a challenge to the whole idea of private property. And to think that this book came out, his book is called A Sand County Almanac, and it was in the Sand Counties that he had his shack. It came out in 1948. So America is at that point recognised as the world power. It's the end of the Second World War. It didn't get there by hugging trees. It got there by cutting them down. And here's this person trying to spread this idea that our idea of ethics must be extended to the rest of nature. And it's been a very slow burn. It was almost unrecognised for about 20 years. It still sells 40,000 copies a year.
Which are book sales that people with a new release would be pretty happy with these days.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it started, it inspired a journal called Environmental Ethics. So his ideas weren't that new, but it's just the way he writes. And it just rewards rereading, just going back. It's a collection of small vignettes. It's observations that he made in and around his shack and in other parts of the states. And then right at the end, is this 6,000-word essay called The Land Ethic, and it's in there he put his moral philosophy about our relationship with nature. He wasn't a philosopher. He wasn't really an ecologist. He was a forester. But it's a very quiet, humble man, and reading his daughter's book about their life at the shack is a unique insight into what makes a person tick. So that was a real highlight, meeting her. I met her and spent an afternoon with her, and she gave me a copy of the book. So I visited the shack every night last week vicariously. I never got to Wisconsin, so I haven't seen it myself.
It's 18 to 7 on 936 ABC Hobart. You're listening to Ted Lefroy, Director of the School for the Environment, Centre for Environment at the at UTES. And he comes in periodically and just we dig around. And some of the ideas, I suppose, Ted, that we have about environment now and looking at where they were formed and how and under which circumstances. It's interesting he's a forester. It's interesting he's operating in that time where, and the 70s, it was still a little bit, where you talk about a country and you talk about their major industries before anything else. Whereas now, if you think about Tasmania, people would think it's environment before they think, oh, Tasmania primarily produces wool and, and you know, mineral resources. It's a different way of building an identity for a place.
Yeah, and it makes you realise that even though he was a scientist, he wasn't afraid to say our biggest questions are not of facts but of values, and it's our attitude towards nature that's got to shift. In a way, he did us no favours by setting up that false dichotomy. It's either a commodity which belongs to us or it's a community to which we belong. Clearly it's both, and we're still working it out. But he just had a lovely, light way of putting it. I think the stunning thing is his use of English, and these short essays just reward rereading.
But he's also questioning the separation of ethics are for people, and they don't belong to animals or plants or rocks, and trying to say, well, you've got to extend the ethics of human activity over all things. So, because we treat ourselves like commodities as well. We sell our time and we sell our energy. We seem to work it out for ourselves.
Yeah.
Why do we find it so difficult? Is that because of religious ideas that say we have dominion over all of this? You know, people going, well, God told me that I'm in charge of it. So,
It just takes time. If you think of it, you know, until the Civil War, people sold people in America. And there is
They still do around the world now, don't they?
That's true. But you can see an ethical extension from the Magna Carta, when rights were granted by one king to a small group of nobles, and then outward to all property owners, then all men, then women, and then recognising different cultures, different peoples. And the logical extension to that is other living things, the boundary between us and the rest of nature. But he was clearly a patient man. He didn't stand on a soapbox. And in fact, what's curious about his book, A Sand County Almanac, is that he buried these essays in a very obscure book, which is not an almanac. An almanac is a list of tides and planting times and astronomical charts. It's not that. It's a collection of essays about nature with some profound messages.
But it is his sort of diaries of a shack dweller, which, I mean, Tasmanians are notorious shack dwellers.
Yeah.
And we dwell in our shacks in a range of different ways. Some want to be in the environment, appreciating it, which is still having an impact on it. Other people want to just blow up cars and shoot them with their rifles.
Yeah.
It's very different ways to be a shack dweller in Tassie, but it is still those observations that you make about your place and where you are.
Exactly. And the reason he bought this rundown farm, 80 acres on a bend in the Wisconsin River, was to know what the responsibilities were of owning land. So it was an experiment in himself. How does it feel if I own it, and what's my responsibility to it?
Because some people want to own land to feel free, to go, well, here, I'm my own sort of king. You get back to the Magna Carta again, going, you know, I want to be an unreasonable leader just in my own little space. No one can touch me here.
Yeah. What he was doing is meeting the expectations of the land rather than looking for a bit of land that met his expectations.
Is that what it is to think like a mountain? What does he describe as thinking like a mountain?
Thinking like a mountain is
seeing... Just imagine, I'll never read that, Ted. What does it say?
Well, thinking like a mountain, it sounds like a Zen koan, but what he's actually saying is he's looking at a piece of landscape from the perspective not just of humans and not just of a cattle rancher or a forester, but from the point of view of a wolf and a deer and a mountain. There's a little bit in it when he says, a buck pulled down by a wolf can be replaced in 2 or 3 years. A range pulled down by too many deer can take decades, and so it is with cows. The cowman who cleans his range of wolves does not realise that he is taking over the wolf's job of trimming the herd to fit the range. He has not learned to think like a mountain. Hence we have dust bowls and rivers washing the future into the sea. It was his way of saying that we need to consider the whole of nature and nature as a whole. So it's really an exercise, it's a thought experiment in looking at a landscape from the perspectives of all the different things that live there.
Great to talk to you this morning.
You too.
Ted Lefroy, Director of the Centre for Environment at UTAS. Now, the book that he wrote is Sand County Almanac, but the book that you've just been reading is Stories Told from the Leopold Shack by Estella B. Leopold, daughter of, who in her 90s
yeah.
is still teaching.
Yeah.
You looking forward to that, Ted?
I am.